Please welcome, as he makes his way through the crowd, Michael Kaplan.
At 26, I took off for Europe on my own. I started in London. I was there for 10 days, and it was a terrific experience. I found that I was fairly fluent in the language. I saw amazing theater, just world-class actors, Glenda Jackson and Derek Jacobi and Gary Oldman, you know, all on stage right in front of me. And I also had that kind of aha moment that I think everybody from this country has when you walk through London and it dawns on you, oh, this is the mothership. You know, because even though we're taught the American Revolution and then had it reinforced by Hamilton, there's still that American attitude that we're completely self-made and that we just came into existence from a big bang. But, you know, you walk around London and you realize, oh, yeah, we're from here. This is what we broke away from. It was a very interesting experience. But my favorite thing was the eavesdropping. Because I would set myself up in cafes and pubs or on the tube with my notebook and my pen, but I really wouldn't be writing. I would just be listening to everyone around me. And that was great. I heard almost exactly the same lover's quarrel between three different couples. And it went like this. What's wrong? Nothing. Okay, there's got to be something. No, there's not. Just why don't you say it now? There's nothing wrong. You know, every time, it was amazing how much exposition was being withheld until, you know, they were private. I found it fascinating. But my favorite moment was I was sitting in Hyde Park and on a bench, and there were two little kids with their father, a six-year-old boy, a four-year-old girl. The father was talking to a friend, and the two of them were playing with the ball. And then around the corner came, two hippie types. And the boy grew very serious, and he said, "Those are strangers." And his sister said, "Why are they strangers?" And in a flash, I saw the stuffy British gentleman that he was destined to become as he put his hands on his hips and said, "I've never seen them before, and neither have you." That was 33 years ago. I've never forgotten that moment. Then I went to Paris. Brief moment of silence for the Cathedral of Notre Dame. That was very, very sad. I went to Paris, and I was so excited. City of lights and city of romance. I just had that American in Paris fantasy ready to take place. I had taken French in seventh grade, eighth grade, ninth grade, and then stopped on a dime. I hated foreign language. I forgot it all. And I knew that there was a really thin line between being, you know, an American in Paris and an ugly American in Paris, you know, that there was a reputation that Americans had for just being so arrogant, they would bark everything in English and, you know, just demand, that they be served in that language. So I worked on one line, which was, pardonnez-moi, je suis un imbécile américain, que parle français aussi tout bien qu'un canard, which translates roughly as, I'm sorry, I'm an imbecile American who speaks French about as well as a duck. And, you know, that got some sympathetic smiles from shopkeepers and cheese purveyors. But honestly, if my seventh grade French teacher had said, look, if you don't pay attention, if you don't study, if you don't practice, when you are in your 20s and sitting in a cafe in Paris, you won't understand anything going on around you, and you will be bored and isolated. That could have changed some lives, maybe mine. as it was, I had no idea what was going on. And as each day went by, I felt like I was cratering, that I needed a game changer. The first thing I did was that I went to that very famous cemetery, Père Lachaise, to see if I could score marijuana at Jim Morrison's grave. And I was successful. And I hurried back to my hotel room and rolled the joint and smoked it. And for the day, walked around stoned and giggling in Paris. But if anything, it heightened my sense that I was just kind of cut off from everybody else and couldn't understand them. And I should say that, you know, I met a couple of Americans and just did not click. It was not happening. So finally, I decided I'll call Aunt Sophie's family. Now, Aunt Sophie was the girlfriend of my high school buddy, Ben. Ben was going to film school in New York. Aunt Sophie was from Paris. She'd been studying in the States. They had met. They'd come together. I'd never met her, but Ben often talked about her. He told me, the fact that I am sleeping with a French woman makes me believe there might be a God after all. And when he heard that I was going to France, he said, you should call Aunt Sophie's family. They'd love to hear from you. And, you know, I filed that under, yeah, that's nothing I'm ever going to do. And now I was calling them up because I needed some kind of contact, some kind of connection. She was not there, but her younger brother and her younger sister invited me to meet them for coffee. His name was Antoine. He was 18 years old, and he was, you know, incredibly handsome and rail thin and just dripping with ennui, just world weary at 18. You could ask him anything. How was your day? How was your class? How was sex with your girlfriend? And he would go, it was a little boring. And his younger sister, Natalie, was delightful. She was high-spirited. She was very flirtatious, but she was honestly like half my size. And that just didn't feel practical. I just felt like I would be some kind of lecherous ventriloquist or something. So, you know, I just decided to keep it on the platonic realm. But they were really sweet. And they invited me over for dinner the next night. And so now I'm there, and I'm meeting the father, who is a professor, and the mother, and we're sitting there and having this lovely dinner. And at one point, the professor turns to me, and he says, so you have met Aunt Sophie? Now, I've been a liar all my life. I don't lie for malice or financial gain or because I want to be president. I came out of the womb eager to please. And there is just something in my genetic makeup that I tell people what they want to hear. And so I will shift the facts a little bit or spin things. I mean, as a perfect example, for the entirety of my marriage, if I buy something and bring it home and my wife asks me, how much was that? I will instinctively shave off some dollars. Because I just want her to feel like that was a great deal and good job and we're all in this together. Unbeknownst to her, she has a lifetime secret 15% discount. Has no idea. So I just didn't feel like I wanted to tell the professor the truth, which was, no, I've never met your daughter. I only know Ben, who now believes in God because he's having sex with your daughter. And so I said, I met her in Los Angeles. Because I figure, little white lie, fine, you know, we'll just get past this. And the evening goes on. It is a lovely time. And then they invite me to their house on the coast of Normandy in the town of Bayeux. Fantastic, you know? This is just turning into a wonderful vacation in France. And so I go with them and take the train, and we ramble around. I see the Bayeux tapestry, which is very famous, although I can't tell you why. And, you know, we go on a hike. Everything elicits from Antoine, it's a little boring, you know, but I'm having an excellent time. We come back for dinner. The mother is so excited, and she says, Aunt Sophie has changed her plans. She will be here tomorrow. And now I am just full of this dread anticipation that I am going to go from American in Paris to ugly American liar in Paris. And the moment that they find me out, that they will just burst into laughter. It will be embarrassing. I want to crawl under the furniture. And I'm trying to figure out, how am I going to play this? I imagine, you know, coming in the next morning to breakfast, and there's Aunt Sophie, and she, assuming I can I figure out which one she is, I'll go up to her, kiss her on each cheek, say, so good to see you, and then over her shoulder so only everybody else can hear, again. And, you know, maybe that will sell it and nobody will be the wiser. But, again, I just keep thinking they're going to laugh at me. This is, you know, a ridiculous, ridiculous lie that I'm caught in. That evening, Antoine and Natalie bring a bunch of their friends together to have a little party. We're sitting around drinking wine. Antoine says, so you will teach us the American bad words? And that was kind of fun. There was one person there who's convinced he was sitting on gold because he had this phrase, fuck on you with this bullshit. And we had to untangle that and then kind of put it back together so it made sense. But again, I'm really, really distracted because I know what's going to happen the next morning. And so eventually I take Natalie aside and I tell her the truth. I say, I don't know why I told your father I met Aunt Sophie. I have never met her. Ben just said I should give you a call. I'm so sorry. This is so embarrassing. And she was very sweet, and she reassured me it was not a big deal, and she talked to Aunt Sophie. It would be fine. And I thought, okay, great. Went to sleep that night. The next morning, heard chatter in the kitchen, came down. There is the fifth member of the family. Aunt Sophie gets up, we go to each other, she says, Michael, I say, Aunt Sophie, and as I kiss her on each cheek, indolent Antoine, standing in the corner, says, it is a very touching reunion. And they all burst into laughter, but I did get to laugh along with them. Thank you.